entirely focused on those delicious food items that they're going to enjoy after breaking their fast. Their entire fast is spent while thinking about those food items. But the fasting of the lovers of Allah is definitely different. The fast observers whose eating and drinking, as well as their level of consumption, consists of lawful or halal and is permissible, are not indulged in any sort of waste and extravagance. Neither they fill their tablecloth with colorful, delicious dishes, nor they practice overeating and belly filling. They limit themselves to consume only a single food and abstain themselves from eating with the intention of enjoyment. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will reward them with best of His bounties. With His infinite generosity, He will bless them. And no one knows or could imagine what sort of special rewards have been accumulated for them by Him. So this was, you know, the last category of those people who can be classified as fast observers based on food consumption. And may Allah make all of us to be one of these people, as the leader of the Islamic Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has said that we need to observe simple iftar. We need to be breaking our fast with simple iftar and not with fancy foods with colorful variety.
Forgive me for everything I've done in the past, when everything was going so fast, and now I just can't go on.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You are by my side, Allah.
Round the world with reporters.
Signatories of the Iran nuclear deal end their fifth session in 2 weeks amid efforts to revive the agreement known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. Two working groups have been formed, one to draft a list of measures that need to be taken by Iran and another to outline the sanctions that have to be removed by the US. Now a third expert group will be working on the matter of sequence. Iran's lead delegate, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, said that would be the focus of talks when they resume next week.
Next week, the important question is to talk about the sequence, because we have already talked about measures, and we have now focused more on the question of sequence to make sure that the U.S., who has left the JCPOA, should come back first, should lift all its sanctions first, and then Iran would follow after the verification.
Although no direct talks have taken place between Iran and the U.S., the American delegation has been engaged in discussions with the other parties, including Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China.
The top priority remains to focus on sanction lifting. In this particular context, the U.S. must lift all its sanctions, may it concern Iran or any third party, in thorough, complete, and straightforward manner.
Before leaving Vienna for Tehran, Araghchi said Iran does not want to prolong the negotiations, but also needs to take the time to work on every single word that's being drafted to come up with a specific formula allowing both Iran and the U.S. to come back to full compliance. Iran says the talks are on the right track and moving forward, but as the EU coordinator put it, there's still a lot of work to be done. Pomalevsky, Vienna.
Tensions between the United States and Russia appear to be ratcheting up in recent weeks over a range of issues, including Ukraine. The Russian Defense Ministry on Tuesday accused the U.S. and NATO of engaging in what it described as provocative activities in the waters and airspace of the Black Sea. Moscow also accused Kiev of trying to destabilize the situation in the eastern Donbass region. Amid escalating tensions, Washington and its NATO allies have rallied behind Kiev. They voiced concern over Russia's troop deployment along its borders with Ukraine, claiming Russia might be planning to invade the country. But Moscow said the military buildup was in response to cold, threatening military action by NATO and nothing more. Washington-Moscow tensions heightened after the U.S. administration announced a new array of anti-Russia sanctions last Thursday. The White House claimed the sanctions were in retaliation for a range of Russia's actions, including its alleged meddling in the U.S. election, cyber espionage, and action in Ukraine. The Kremlin responded with tit-for-tat measures. But the hostile attitude of the U.S. and its allies is not limited to Russia. They have also collectively formed and launched a pressure campaign against China. Just last month, the U.S., along with the European Union, Britain, and Canada, imposed coordinated actions on Beijing under the pretext of human rights violations. The United States and China have also been embroiled in disputes over a host of issues ranging from trade, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. Beijing has time and again accused Washington of seeking to destabilize mainland China by interfering in the affairs of Hong Kong and Chinese Taipei, as well as fomenting tensions in the South China Sea. The country last week escalated its military activities after the U.S. announced it would deploy its warships to the region. The Chinese president on Tuesday also criticized the hegemonic power structures in the global governance, calling for the rejection of such moves.
The future of the world should be mastered by all countries in the world. Rules made by a single country or just a few countries cannot be forcibly applied on others. The world order cannot be led by unilateralism from some country.
The growing tension between Washington on the one side and Moscow and Beijing on the other is bringing the two countries even closer. U.S. President Joe Biden will probably face a nightmare scenario given deepening ties and strategic cooperation between China and Russia, the countries Washington thinks is a threat to its global interests.
Northern Ireland is bracing itself for more potential trouble. Peaceful pop-up protests across the region in the coming days. An opportunity, some say, to catch police by surprise and block major roads for a time. They follow days of riots and violent clashes earlier this month that plunged the city of Belfast and parts of Northern Ireland into a crisis not seen since the dark days of the Troubles that started in the late 1960s and led to nearly three decades of bloodshed.
There will be protests around the north of Ireland, but what's worrying is that there's a lot of disinformation also. What we're seeing here is a hidden hand and trying to raise tensions between the Catholic and Protestant communities. And when we see this, these things happening, we always have to remember that when there's a void, there, extremists fill that void. And when the extremists are there to fill that void, we always see the hidden hand of British security services.
Tensions have been rising since Brexit, which many warned would threaten the Good Friday Agreement of 1998 that put an end to the Troubles. The implementation of the Northern Ireland Protocol allowed the UK to leave the EU without setting up a border on the island of Ireland. Instead, the UK and EU agreed to a customs border between Britain and Northern Ireland. Now, the loyalist and unionist communities who wish to remain under British rule are demanding the protocol be scrapped.
This would seriously destabilize the peace and brought us back to somewhere that was pre-1998 and something that we as a society didn't want to see.
The riots were also fueled by the country's police chief's refusal to resign after a decision not to prosecute Sinn Féin politicians for attending a large funeral last year against COVID restrictions.
I don't see why Simon Byrne would have resigned. I think that he gave his report to those that would have made that decision within the PPS, and you know, it, once he has passed that on, there's not much he can do after that. He made recommendations.
Efforts are underway for a political settlement of tensions, including a call for dialogue among all sides from the U.S. president. Still, fears of more unrest and violence are in the air. Said Barisa, London.
The EU's top diplomat, Josep Borrell, updated the bloc's 27 foreign affairs ministers on the latest state of play regarding talks in Vienna to try and save the Iran nuclear deal. He told them that discussions have become less general and more focused, particularly regarding U.S. sanctions against Iran and the Islamic Republic's nuclear energy program.
I talked with Secretary of State Blinken last week when he was in Brussels. I also talked with Minister Sharif. I think that both parts are really interested in reaching an agreement.
Borrell talks about an agreement, but critics say the EU has been much too soft on the US. After all, an agreement was reached in 2015. It was endorsed by the UN. Only the US broke the terms of the accord when Donald Trump took Washington out of the deal almost 3 years ago.
With Iran, we'll see what happens.
Analysts say in those 3 years, the EU, as coordinator of the deal, officially called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, failed to stand up to Trump. Representatives from Iran, Russia, China, France, Britain, Germany, and the European Commission are attempting to preserve the accord during negotiations in the Austrian capital. US officials are there on the sidelines of the talks. Given that the nuclear deal is underpinned by UN Resolution 2231, the vast majority of diplomats agree it should be respected.
We are 193 member states of the United Nations. Of course, the United States, as you've rightly pointed out, is a powerful member state, but they are a member state. And so we need to rally the numbers against those that may have different opinions.
Some citizens we've been talking to say Tel Aviv is behind efforts to derail the nuclear agreement.
Israel have interest and Israel are kind of pushing America.
Frankly, what we need is more peace and not more warmongering.
Tehran insists the only way the issue can be resolved is if Washington lifts all of its illegal sanctions. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
He has imposed more tight restrictions to fight the spread of the coronavirus. Earlier, Turkish president said that the daily lockdown during the first 2 weeks of the holy month of Ramadan will start at 7 p.m. instead of 9 p.m. The lockdown will last till 5 a.m. every day, as the weekend lockdown will continue with stricter measures and more police officers present in the streets to make sure citizens and residents are abiding by the rules. During the weekend, security forces in all 81 provinces were out to make sure people are not violating the lockdown. Tourists are the only ones allowed to be outside during the lockdowns. In Istanbul alone, some 20,000 policemen took part in this campaign. Turkish Interior Minister threatened to punish those who do not respect the rules.
We will be out with our full force. Foreigners with residency permits are also subjected to restrictions and lockdowns, and they have to obey the rules just like others. I have the authority to revoke the residency permits of those who try to exploit the situation, pretending to be tourists. We will not let this happen.
The death toll in Turkey surged last month when restrictions were relaxed. Some blame the people who didn't act responsibly. Others blame the government for taking decisions based on the economic needs of the country rather than what is better for people's health. Analysts believe the government must take stricter measures. However, it is the economic situation that is preventing it from doing so.
The government is doing its best against the pandemic, but unfortunately the cases are rising because the country cannot afford full closure of businesses. Therefore, semi-closure is the only solution, and people must be more responsible.
Turkish Health Ministry said 20 million vaccine jabs have been distributed across the country. This is as Turkey says it has potentially developed a vaccine that just entered the phase of human trials. Turkish Industry and Technology Minister Mustafa Varank has volunteered for the trials. Turkish government wants to welcome tourists again after the holy month of Ramadan. However, many believe it is still too soon for this step, as only 25% of citizens have been vaccinated. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
aftermath scenes of a failed security operation against thousands of protesters demanding the expulsion of French ambassador from Pakistan. The public resentment pitched high when the police launched operation against the protesters in the eastern city of Lahore. At the heart of public outrage is the revoking of a 6-month-old agreement by the government with Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, or the TLP, a political and religious group. The TLP championed the cause to expel French ambassador over a repeated incident of blasphemy of Muslim Prophet Muhammad and their official patronage by the French government. The TLP supporters allegedly attacked a police station in Lahore and kidnapped 11 policemen, including a senior official. Later on, the protesters released all the police officials. The police says an oil tanker with over 50,000 liters of fuel was also taken away by the protesters, which caused ripples within the corridors of power of its possible explosion. A strong public reaction once again forced the government to halt its security operation. There were countrywide wheel jam strikes and closure of businesses after many opposition parties and other religious groups announced to support the TLP's demand to expel French ambassador.
How long we would put up with incidents like burning of Holy Quran? How long we would put up with blasphemy being committed against our Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him? But now we have decided not to tolerate it any longer.
Alarmed by public backlash, Prime Minister Imran Khan struggled hard in his live address to the nation to calm down public anger.
When Muslim countries stand up together and collectively boycott trade with France over blasphemy incidents, then it would have an impact. I would lead this campaign internationally now to prevent incidents of blasphemy.
Pakistan banned TLP last week, declaring it a terrorist organization in a country where violence against the police has become a norm by almost all major political parties to press their demands.
The government has resumed negotiation with the TLP, which is not ready to settle down on anything short of the expulsion of French ambassador from Pakistan. Now the TLP seems to be on a far more strong footing after a failed security operation against them. Therefore, analysts believe that the government is also running out of options but to withdraw its decision to ban it. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
The factory in the south of Tehran, where a new vaccine named Osvit would be produced within a few months to immune people against the deadly coronavirus. The name is taken from the pharmaceutical company that is developing the vaccine in collaboration with a knowledge-based firm. The joint project will soon be tested on humans to be mass-produced in the capital, Tehran.
Given that the initial phases of the Osvit 19 are completed and the earlier stages, including the animal phase, were carried out on rats and monkeys successfully, we need to launch this mass production line, and now we are prepared.
I asked the officials whether the formula is imported from other countries or it is indigenous, and this was the answer.
Not even a single word of the 420-page project of the vaccine has been non-native. It's fully developed in Iran. We took samples from the first patients at the beginning of the pandemic. Then it was characterized, inactivated, and cultivated. The job has been a very complicated teamwork and totally indigenous.
Right now, the company is producing the vials, and as the manager said, they can produce up to 6,000 every hour. They also told us that there is a capacity to produce about 20 million doses of the jab in a year. After the official ceremony in which the vial was unveiled, the Vice President for Science and Technology launched the production line.
Within the past few years, very good things have been achieved in the domain of vaccine production in the country. This year, we have several corona vaccines to be mass-produced. This vial production line is a very important infrastructure for other companies that are developing the vaccine.
The Osvit vaccine must be injected in two stages with a 3-week interval.
Iran says the second phase of vaccination against COVID-19 will begin in early May, and at this stage, about 15 million people would be vaccinated against the coronavirus. To this end, the country needs about 30 million doses of the vaccine, out of which a great number will be homemade ones. Humam Abedi, Tehran.
America's longest war in Afghanistan is going to end as Washington has pledged to pull out its forces from the country in 5 months. Apart from other consequences of Washington's war in Afghanistan, casualties caused by the conflict over the past two decades showed that almost 90,000 Afghan and U.S. military forces, more than 70,000 civilians, and over 84,000 terrorists have lost their lives since 2001. The main cause behind such casualties is said to be Washington's failures, including taking the Taliban not so seriously. Although weak presence of Taliban was seen in remote villages of Afghanistan in 2001, it slowly expanded its maneuver area to big cities by launching bomb attacks or complex assaults in and after 2005. The attacks mostly claimed the lives of civilians. In response, Afghan and foreign troops launched more military operations, especially air strikes, increasing human losses in the country. Now that Washington has realized there is no military solution to the Afghan war, U.S. President Joe Biden announced on Wednesday that all U.S. troops will leave the war-torn country by September 11, the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. The Afghan government strongly believes that the Taliban will never be able to take control over the country militarily due to high capabilities of Afghan national armed troops in the fight against terrorism.
The Afghan Defense Ministry, in close cooperation with other government bodies, is fully ready to confront the worst-case scenario. Concerns of some international intelligence agencies are because of the security of their own countries, but we are not worried because we are now capable enough to defend our nation.
Meneher also argued that the only way to put an end to bloodshed in Afghanistan is the establishment of a united front by Afghan people without being dependent on foreign players, and convince the Taliban to lay down their arms.
The time has arrived for all Afghans to come together and set aside differences in order to use the ongoing peace process as an opportunity for the country to see peace and stability after decades-long war and violence.
While all players are waiting for the launch of Turkey summit on the Afghan peace process, the Taliban say they are not willing to attend it because the U.S. violated the terms of the agreement signed between the two in Doha, February last year. Based on the Doha agreement, U.S. military forces have to leave Afghanistan by May 1st. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
A show of military might. Different units of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army paraded the forces' latest military equipment on the National Army Day. In Tehran, commanders of the Army's Air Force, Navy, and Ground Force, as well as senior commanders of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, were present to oversee the event. Ahead of the ceremonies, a message from leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, was read out, where he praised the contributions the Army has made to the security of the country. Army officials say serving the Iranian people is their top priority.
In fact, through these parades, we seek to send messages to our nation. We want to tell our people that we will continue to stand with you to ensure your peace and security, just as we have done over the past four decades.
The parades featured the latest military achievements and weaponry of the Iranian army, including radars, tanks, armored vehicles, and fighter jets. The highlight was the latest drones, missiles, and missile systems that are developed inside the country, including Sayyad and Mursad missile systems. The Islamic Republic provides for 80% of its defensive needs domestically. Officials say the country owes this to four decades of arms embargoes imposed on the country by the U.S. and its allies.
What we did in the past four decades was to look at the sanctions as an opportunity to rely on our own resources. We discovered new potentials inside the country, and here we are today producing nearly every essential military equipment, from missiles to UAVs. So today, our security is not tied to foreign arms suppliers.
The National Army Day was designated in 1979, following a historic speech by late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. Back then, he thanked the army for its role in the victory of the Islamic Revolution by announcing its neutrality, as the former Pahlavi regime pushed commanders to suppress the revolution. Every year, this massive parade sends strong messages of security to Iranians and the region. But on top of all the messages, the annual occasion is widely interpreted as the army's renewed support for the Islamic establishment. More officials say, with or without sanctions, the Iranian armed forces continue to defend the country's sovereignty. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for joining me and my wonderful guests on today's episode of Back to Reality. In the studio with me, I have the honor and pleasure of having my brothers in faith and humanity join us on today's interesting discussion. To my left, I have the one and only. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Sister Zainab, again, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure
thank
to be with you.
Thank you for joining us, bro.
My name is Brother Yasser. I am from South Africa.
MashaAllah.
I've been here too long. Hope to benefit.
What are you doing here? Why have you been here for so long?
I've been studying in the Islamic seminary for the last 11 years. I'm just finishing my master's.
May Allah increase your tawfiq and prolong Inshallah. Your life. And to my right, I have my special brother and guest. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us.
This is Ayman Rizvi, and I am actually in the Hawza as well for about 7 to 8 years.
MashaAllah.
Finishing up my second master's program here.
We live in the age of technology, right, per se, and information and data and knowledge, sort of. Well, actually, that's debatable. Information is different from knowledge. And all of that is very much different from wisdom. That's why it's the 21st century and we still have flat earthers. I don't even know what that's about. Anyway, but we can't help but think whether it's the audience that create the news, you know, and their expectations and their eagerness and their vibe that creates the news, or is it the media that creates the trends and the news and, you know, pop culture and what people should be interested in? Which one do you guys think really has their hands on the steering wheel on this matter?
It is definitely, in my opinion,
the audience.
The media.
What?
I'll tell you why. If you watch just cartoons.
Yes.
Just cartoons.
Yes.
Right? Say Rosie has kids, you would probably know, like Disney cartoons, right? Not the old ones, even the new ones.
Yeah, especially.
There was one, right, now that was recently done that talked about the human soul.
Yes.
It's called Soul.
Literally called Soul. Yeah.
So it was like.
And the lead character reminds me of you so much.
So my son was asking me, we watched it, and my son was asking me, and then even some certain Islamic scholars, people who are Islamically inclined, said, this is a good thing, you know, they're showing it. I said, no. There are very intricate faults with this movie.
I swear to God.
Now for me, because we speak about the soul and the ruh, it trying to bring that down to my son was difficult. How to explain.
How old is he?
He's 12. So how to explain that concept of the soul and how this movie portrayed it in such a wrong way.
So wrong.
Right? Okay, fine, you have, but so the media now is showing you what? It's showing you why. One issue here. One basic issue with this movie is showing you that between a human soul and an animal soul, there is no difference.
No difference. Yeah.
But you need someone to understand that concept in the movie to pick it up.
Yeah.
Not everyone will pick it up,
yeah,
but
yeah,
you will
yeah.
see it. Like I told that to a friend of mine because we studied this. He said, because I studied you, so I said, so a kid watching that who doesn't have somebody who studied Islam or doesn't have that parent who has this knowledge behind him, The media showing this is what the soul is. There's no difference between you and another animal.
Exactly. Halal. And from it's going to be encrypted in their
exactly.
mind.
Exactly. And from then, you have all the other philosophical theories that they bring up with.
Mm.
That you are just a machine. You can be this. You can be that.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. So, not only that, if you look at fashion magazines, what are fashion magazines doing? They're creating an image of what a perfect woman is.
Yep.
So, not the audience. They want the audience to follow what they are portraying. This is the shoes you wear. This is the purse you have to buy. This is the, you know, the hat you have to wear, and so on and so forth.
But to gain what objective?
Just to be fashionable.
And of course, materialism, capitalism,
and
consumerism.
You are now judged by what you have.
Exactly. And you don't have. Exactly. So, bro, which one do you think steers it?
You know,
audience or media?
The question I think should be that, you know, in two perspectives, like what should be and what is
mm-hmm.
currently.
Right.
Because, you know, currently media is creating news for
mm-hmm.
not to cater people, not to cater the needs of the people. Media is basically is a tool right now in the hands of imperialism or, you know, the superpowers to create consumerism, as Brother Yasir has said, or some other goals, some other
objectives.
Yeah, some other objectives which are basically evil in their nature.
Mm.
So, but what should be done? It should be basically the to cater the needs of the audience. Like when I remember that I was watching a clip of speech of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, when he came back to Iran on the same day or I think the next day, he was giving a speech in
mm-hmm.
front of a huge crowd, in which he mentioned that I don't have the problem with cinema, I don't have problem with the radio, I don't have problem with the television or films, I have the problem with what you show them through
mm-hmm.
these mediums, right? So again, this is the...
So I don't mind the means, I mind the content.
Of course.
Okay,
The content is really important, and I really don't show cartoons anymore to my kids.
Seriously?
Yes, I don't.
You for real?
Yes, for real.
Any cartoons? Like DreamWorks, Disney, Pixar?
Not, I think, very old cartoons like Tom and Jerry or something like that. But, you know, recently I have seen all of these videos very carefully. And again, Brother Yasir is right that they are, you know, intrinsically putting things in these animations.
I understand that, but bro, hear me out.
Yes.
The byproduct of Disney Channel,
yeah, of course.
Personified, I must say.
Sure.
I'm not here to defend Disney Channel,
yeah.
But I'm saying that, God, no, I'm not here to defend Disney Channel at all. But it did help a lot with character building in the sense of, well, I was exposed to all of that, and then I grew up, and I was like, all right, I ain't going to want to do that. I ain't going to want to do that. I ain't want to be this. I ain't going to follow that Disney princess's footsteps because she lost her shoe at midnight, and that just doesn't make sense. Right? I was equipped with the choice to decide which courses. But if you deprive your children of all that's going on in the world...
No, it's not deprivation. It's basically a selection. You know, I select things which I think are good for them. Because if you really think about it, you know... for example...
But what else? But, okay, if you select this for them... What is the alternative that they're exposed with?
Exactly. The alternative is basically either some Iranian cartoons, which are, you know, okay. Because you cannot show them everything. Everything on the media, you cannot show
your
kids.
No, you can't.
So you have to be, you need to be picky. You need to pick and choose what you can show your kids. The same way I defended homeschooling, I would defend this as well. Imam Khomeini, all of our Maraja Kiram, you take a look at these personalities or all of the great Mujtahideen, they never watched Disney cartoons. They never watched anything. And they are great in their character.
They are great. Yeah, but they had alternatives.
What kind of alternatives?
Knowledge.
Of course, exactly. You need to give knowledge to your children.
Yeah.
You need to become the best role model possible for your kids.
Mm.
And this is exactly what I'm trying to do right now. I try not to, you know, tell them to do this or do that or don't do this or don't do that. I simply act in front of them. I perform them, and then kids learn themselves quickly.
Yeah, absolutely, because they're like sponges.
Yeah, they learn it quickly, and then I also do not teach anything illogical to my kids. I have my eldest son.
But I mean, it could be, it could, to you, it may seem logical. It might seem logical because it's your logic. But what if 15 years from now, your child looks back and you're like, yeah, what Baba said then really doesn't make sense anymore. What then?
Well, we have examples right now. I mean, I think you should ask a question from Ayatollah Khamenei that what kind of cartoons he watched when he was little. For example, in his childhood, I don't believe that there were cartoons probably, right? And cartoons or media, films, dramas, I'm not against them. Same way the Imam Khomeini said that I'm not against the
cinema.
I'm not against it. I took my son to show him film Muhammad to a theater.
So, okay, the content
must be proper. The content is very important. If you don't really pay attention to the content, you will lose your generation.
Right.
You will lose your generation.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Brother Yasser, back to the other question. Do you really feel that the audience is not the one who navigates the content of what the media spits out?
Navigated or created?
Navigated, created,
they
both.
No, they can't create. It's impossible for them to create.
Why impossible? That's
because
such a strong word.
Say you mentioned something there. If you look at the media industry right now, it is governed by four or five people. That's it. And between them, they have their own
empire.
Monopoly, the empire. In between themselves, they have their own issues. They decide what they show you. They decide. Don't. This is not something they just. This is a huge organization. They have think tanks.
Absolutely.
They have, for example, market research. It is like it's like a huge institute that planning and you know thought goes into what they are going to show.
Every step of the way.
Exactly.
Every step of the way.
It's not something that's all tomorrow. Okay, fine. Breaking news, whatever. That's different. For example, yesterday I was having a discussion with one of my teachers about the visit of the Pope to Sayyid Sistani. Why? Why? Why did right now? What was the goal behind the Pope's visit to Iraq?
Yeah, I think about that too.
What did he go for?
Yeah, exactly.
Was there a reason for him to go to Iraq?
Yeah.
Was it to see the demolished churches? Syria is worse. Other countries are worse. Why then decide now? Because it's a more important thing. Like even then, when Sayyid spoke to him about Palestine, for example, you know, and these type of things.
Oh, there we go.
See, there were things mentioned that they probably did not foresee. Because they see Sayyid as this middleman, you know, this Gandhi type of figure.
Yeah.
In fact, he isn't. You know, the wisdom that he does in all of his acts, you know, it requires a person. Maybe 15 years from now, we will see the actual results of that wisdom. But, for example, what I mentioned is that media, why did the speech happen with no media present? Why has he not seen any political figure for the last 10 years?
Right.
And all of these other things, you know, you can ask these questions.
So you're saying that they created this news
for a particular purpose.
Aha.
But that purpose, according to some of the teachers and stuff that I've spoken to, it did not come to fruition.
Due to the Sayyid's wisdom.
Due to the Sayyid's wisdom.
Don't underestimate him. Don't look at his old, fragile, frail face and content.
Exactly. So also a lot of planning went into it. A lot of thought process went into it. So something so big. It's always like, for example, the newspapers, the cartoons that they're going to show you, whether Disney or not, just cartoon strips they show you, the ideas that they push in certain newspapers. For example, in America, you have Fox News. They're pushing, I'll put it on IRIB. Press TV itself has an agenda.
Of course.
All news agents have an agenda that they are pushing.
Absolutely.
And they have to stick to it.
Yeah,
they have to stick to that
agenda. Either it is a positive agenda or whatever
the agenda
may
be.
They have an agenda. They have to, you know, use think tanks and
otherwise
it's pointless.
Right?
So they want to show this agenda to who? The audience. The audience is not creating it. The audience, or if you're a person is wise enough, can you say, okay, this is rubbish? Or, and what is also important is, like, the BBC is the master in this. They will show you a news piece. Within that particular news piece article, there will be 85% truth. Within that particular piece, there will be one or two lines that is not true, but is the agenda.
Oh.
And you will, because
of the rest of the truth,
you will
accept this one too. You'll let it slide.
So they are creating it. They are showing you. They are actually putting in you what they want to show you. And I've seen this
This is actually a tactic.
That's devious.
It's a tactic in terms of propaganda.
Right.
That you will show 80%.
But then is that so wrong? Does everyone not do it? Everyone has an agenda.
That's what I'm saying. Like I mentioned, it's not an issue of having an agenda or not.
Yeah.
It is. Is that agenda? What is the objective of it?
I mean, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells the story of Nabi Yusuf ala Nabina wa alihi alayhi salam because he wants to fit a message through that story.
Exactly. The objective of that agenda is important.
Aha.
What?
So the means is right.
The means...
Everyone does it.
Like, when television came to Iran, even television radio came to Iran.
You don't remember that, do you?
I know. I wasn't here at that time, but the we see
you
it
weren't
in the books.
Born that time, bro.
I was not born. So when this was in the books, I must give it from my own personal experience.
Because you said it with so much conviction. Yeah. I was like, what? So
with the television, I know, because I've seen the fatwa.
Ah, okay.
Right.
Okay.
So when television came to Iran, marhum Allama Askari, rahmatullah alayh, says that it's haram. After a while, he said, this media or this means is a double-edged sword.
Yes.
It can be used for good.
Yes.
And it can be used for bad.
The wisdom of our scholars.
So he changed. Even the same with the radio, with Ayatollah Borujerdi, rahmatullah alayh, same thing.
Same with social media,
yeah,
Instagram.
Same thing. Everything. So you see that there is good in it. You can be useful. It's so unfortunately, we don't use it. We don't have the capacity or the infrastructure to use it as we should.
But we should, though. I mean, especially during these last few months, I feel like the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei has been emphasizing on the activities that youth should, like, you know, they should up their game regarding their activities in social media and create a platform for themselves in that atmosphere to preach the messages of their religion and to put it in, like you said, create an infrastructure for ourselves to just slip it in as subliminal messages. Don't blow it out from rooftop, yell it out off your rooftops that, okay, Islam is the right religion and whoever does not follow it is going to burn in hell. That doesn't work. That never worked. That's all the time we have for today's episode of Back to Reality. Thank you so very much, brothers,
You're
for
welcome.
Being with me and for our listeners. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
U.S. leadership has stumbled from one military debacle to another, a trajectory mirroring the sad finales of other historical imperial powers, says Chris Hedges, writer, in an article titled The Collapse of American Empire. Stay tuned for the details, please. America's defeat in Afghanistan is one in a string of catastrophic military blunders that herald the death of the American empire. The United States political and military leadership has stumbled from one military debacle to another. Korea, Vietnam, Lebanon, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya. The trajectory of military fiascos mirrors the sad finales of the American empire. Imperial ineptitude is matched by domestic ineptitude. The collapse of good government at home, with legislative, executive, and judicial systems all seized by corporate power, ensures that the incompetent and the corrupt, those dedicated not to the national interest, but to swelling the profits of the oligarchic elite, lead the U.S. into a cul-de-sac. Rulers and military leaders, driven by venal self-interest, are often buffoonish characters in a grand comic operetta. How else to think of Alan Dulles, Dick Cheney, George W. Bush, Donald Trump, or the hapless Joe Biden? While their intellectual and moral vacuity is often darkly amusing, it is murderous and savage when directed towards their victims. There is not a single case since 1941 when the coups, political assassinations, election fraud, black propaganda, blackmail, kidnapping, brutal counterinsurgency campaigns, U.S. sanctioned massacres, torture in global black sites, proxy wars, or military interventions carried out by the U.S. resulted in the establishment of a democratic government. The two-decade-long wars in the West Asia region, the greatest strategic blunder in American history, have only left in their wake one failed state after another. Yet no one in the ruling class is held accountable. War, when it is waged to serve utopian absurdities, such as implanting a client government in different parts of the world, descends into a quagmire. The massive allocation of money and resources to the U.S. military, which includes Biden's request for $715 billion for the Defense Department in the fiscal year 2020, and $11.3 billion, or 1.6% increase over 2021, is not in the end about national defense. The bloated military budget is designed, as Seymour Melman explained in his book, the permanent war economy, primarily to keep the American economy from collapsing, or we really make anyone more weapons. Liberal interventionists, because they wrap themselves in high ideals, are responsible for numerous military and foreign policy debacles. The call by liberal interventionists such as Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, Susan Rice, and Samantha Power to fund terrorists in Syria and depose Muammar Gaddafi in Libya rent these countries, as in Afghanistan and Iraq, into warring systems. The liberal interventionists are also the tip of the spear in the campaign to ratchet up tensions with China and Russia. The core belief of imperialists, whether they come in the form of a Barack Obama or a George W. Bush, is racism and ethnic chauvinism, the notion that Americans are permitted, because of superior attributes, to impose their values on lesser races and peoples by force. This racism carried out in the name of Western civilization and its corollary white supremacy unites the rabid imperialist and liberal interventionist in the Republican and Democratic parties. U.S. decades-long military fiascos, a feature of all late empires, are called micromilitarism. The poverty of half the nation and concentration of wealth in the hands of a tiny oligarchic cabal, the wanton murder of unarmed civilians by militarized police, the rage at the ruling elites, expressed with nearly half the electorate voting for a con artist and a demagogue, and a mob of his supporters storming the Capitol, are the internal signs of disintegration in the U.S. The inability of the for-profit National Health Services to cope with the pandemic, the passage of a COVID relief bill, and the proposal of an infrastructure bill that would hand the bulk of some $5 trillion to corporations while tossing crumbs, one-time checks of $1,400 to a citizenry in deep financial distress will only fuel the decline in the U.S. Because of the loss of unionized jobs, the real decline of wages, deindustrialization, chronic underemployment and unemployment, and punishing austerity programs, the U.S. is plagued by a plethora of diseases of despair, including opioid addictions, alcoholism, suicides, gambling, depression, morbid obesity, and mass shootings. These are the consequences of a deeply troubled society. And worse, the loss of the dollar as the world's reserve currency will instantly raise the cost of imports. It will result in unemployment of Depression-era levels. It will force the empire to dramatically contract. It will, as the economy worsens, fuel a hyper-nationalism that will most likely be expressed through a fascism. The mechanisms already in place for total social control, militarized police, a suspension of civil liberties, wholesale government surveillance, enhanced terrorism laws, that railroad people into the world's largest prison system and censorship overseen by the digital media monopolies will seamlessly cement into place a police state. Nations that descend into crises this severe seek to deflect the rage of a betrayed population on foreign scapegoats. The defeat in Afghanistan is a familiar and sad story. One, all those blinded by imperial hubris endure. The tragedy, however, is not the collapse of the American empire, but taking that, lacking the ability to engage in self-critique and self-correction. As it dies, it will lash out in a blind, in chaos fury at innocence at home and abroad.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
آدم روزه میگیرتش اچواسا نسبت به دوروبریای خودش تون میشه.
Sometimes during the month of Ramadan, fasting takes away our energy and we become angry. We might lose our control toward our family members or close friends. This is because we are not in habit of fasting every day of the year, so we may lose our temper, more especially at the beginning of the month of Ramadan. We have to take care of our temper because we might be under more pressure compared to the ordinary days.
من حسن منكم في هذا الشهر خلقه
The Holy Prophet of Islam, in his Sha'baniya sermon, states, if someone is good-tempered during month of Ramadan, he will pass the Sirat bridge in the other world fast. On the day when many people slip on their path towards heaven, the good-tempered people during Ramadan will pass this path easily. It is probable that upon not controlling our anger, we might be punished harshly, both in this world and the hereafter. Therefore, if we want to be prosperous, both in this world and the hereafter, it's better to manage our anger, especially during the holy month of Ramadan. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.